My name is Susanna. I am a white North American woman living in Northern Indiana. I grew up in Georgia in Southern North American culture. I am a Christian, kind of outside the institutional church, and this is The Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. We are with my friend, Susanna. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty well. It's kind of cold up here in Indiana, but we're going to make it.
So it's fall right now, Indiana, 2023, for those who hopefully listen to this in 10 years from now, right? How cold is it?
I think it's about 47 degrees, which, as we'll probably discuss, I am a Southerner and I am not okay with this.
Yeah, November 10th. And, you know, I lived in South Bend with my family for a number of years in Indiana. It gets so cold so quickly, right? And it stays for so long, but hoping you can weather it inside. We're here in Tucson where it's warm and sunny. I'm sorry. Probably not the South you're from, but let's hop in. Tell us about your story, your cultural identity. Love to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Susanna Griffith. I am originally Southern Christian white majority culture. North American. I grew up for the most part in Georgia. So I've got a little bit of the Southern accent going on still, I'm told, especially up here in Indiana. I grew up in a family that was Christian, raised in the Presbyterian Church USA. At one point in my adult life, I was married to an African American man, and together we had three children who are the light and joy of my life, three girls who are biracial. I'm now married to another white North American Southern Christian. So we have a blended family, and we currently sort of expanded our cultural horizons. We are foster parents to a 17-year-old young woman from Mexico.
My friend here is modest as well. You have a PhD. Talk a little bit about your academic pedigree. That's such a weird word, right?
Makes me sound like a doggy.
I know. That's I know. Is that even used in academia? I threw it out there.
Yeah, I don't even know. So I went to Vanderbilt for grad school. I got a Master of Theological Studies and then continued to get my PhD there. I finished in 2020 with a PhD in Old Testament, which I used to teach for 3 years as a professor at a Mennonite seminary in Indiana. And I quit from that job this summer and am now doing a homeless ministry in South Bend.
That's wonderful. That's awesome. Let's talk a little bit more about cultural identity. And I loved, actually, you're the first person, and I'm interviewing everybody from North America, except one person thus far. I've interviewed about 10 people. You brought up North America being a social location in which you're saying you're situated, which is really cool to hear somebody acknowledge that. What parts of your cultural identity are really important to you as you've grown in your faith and Southern family and kids and all of that? I'd love to hear.
I think that from being a Southerner there, we could talk all day about the problems with the South historically and currently. At the same time, I think that being a Southerner, the tradition and practice of hospitality is really, really important to me. This is something that I've had to cultivate in myself a good bit. I am such an introvert, and the idea of like having people come into my home is sometimes really intimidating. But at the same time, I grew up in a culture where it was important to acknowledge people and recognize them when you see them on the street, whoever they are, sort of a my house is your house kind of attitude, ideally, where church potlucks with mac and cheese and hash brown casserole, that was where I was raised. And I was I feel like I very much grew up in a culture where I was raised not only by my nuclear family of origin, but also by mostly older generations of church folks in the little church where I attended, who really saw me as their child, their grandchild, yeah. and saw it as their responsibility to make sure I grew up right. So hospitality, that's really important to me. I think I see myself sort of being forged in the cultural climate of a South that was really created through the civil rights struggle. And growing up in Atlanta, I had the opportunity to sort of observe both the blending of cultures and also many ongoing echoes of that segregation. And sort of coming of age in Nashville, where another Southern city like Atlanta, where I grew up, smaller, but still with many of the same gifts and challenges. I was in an interracial relationship for several years. And in that, my eyes were opened in a different way to racial inequality in the South, where my, at that time, boyfriend and later husband was really looked at askance for being with a white woman. And later when we had children, it was like, where did you get that baby from? And people making assumptions about my kids that were never really projected onto me as a white person. So I think engagement in like the history of racial inequality and struggle is something about my culture that is very important to me, especially as I continue to parent three biracial girls in a marriage of two white folks. That's a real complexity and tension and gift.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing about that. Let's talk region a little bit. So my family's from Texas. It's a different brand of the South in Georgia. I don't know all that much about it. Coming to Indiana, central northeast part of the United States, let's talk church. How is church different or similar culturally as you've moved through those spaces as a Southerner?
Well, I think that something that I grew up with very much was the notion of church being something that was created by and kind of for an older generation. And I'm not sure how much that is regionally or just the denomination in which I grew up on in has a lot of older folks. Yeah. In that space, it was very normalized to sort of mix discussion of politics and religion. And I was raised in a church where, you know, the Iraq war starting in the early 2000s and like my church going to different protests of that and me thinking that was just very normal for church folks to be engaged in those kinds of political discourses. And then as I grew up, I realized that that wasn't necessarily the norm and not even necessarily desirable all the time, though I definitely think there's a role for prophetic witness, like that is at the heart of the Christian faith, as you've yeah. written about in your own book, right? But yeah, I think I grew up in a very kind of politicized church atmosphere. As I sort of journeyed through my young adulthood, I kind of realized how weird and uncomfortable that would be for a lot of people in other contexts. So even going to Tennessee, I stopped going to a Presbyterian church and I started going to a non-denominational church because I kind of wanted to be with more young people. And I kind of immediately found that like a lot of the assumptions that I had about church were just not ones that were normal for other folk. When politics did come up, it could be sort of a subject for rebuke, sort of creating disunity maybe.
Yeah.
And this was especially around the time of the 2016 election. And yeah, that just being a really watershed moment for a lot of church folks, defining or maybe even trying to redefine or reclaim what evangelicalism meant. I think at that time in my life, I would have identified with the word evangelical as an identifier of myself. And that being a moment where I really had to take a step back and think, man, what does that even mean? Or is this a term that's so co-opted by something that I don't feel like represents me? And then kind of maybe the third stage of my religious journey was coming up here to Indiana after I finished my PhD and I got hired by a Mennonite seminary.
Which is its own subculture right there, it's a different Christian.
Its own subculture. And I realized very much that I wanted to be part of this culture. I was like, so maybe I'm not Presbyterian, like my family of origin, like maybe that culture doesn't totally fit me. Evangelical culture seems to be kind of going off the deep end. Maybe Mennonites are like this middle way of like navigating these different things. And in the Mennonite church, I found a lot of themes of peace and justice that resonated with what I'd grown up with in many ways. But at the same time, I found sort of more of a passion for scripture and sort of creating theology through scripture that was different than what I'd grown up with, because we were super freaked out by the Bible in the church where I grew up, I feel like. And the Bible is admittedly a little freaky in parts, and I think I can say that as someone with a PhD in Bible.
Yep.
But ultimately, and so I tried very hard to assimilate into the Mennonite culture where I was working and worshiping. That worked out pretty well for me for a little while, until I needed to get a divorce. And then I realized what a cultural taboo I was stepping into. What I was doing in rupturing what appeared to others as rupturing a relationship felt very inappropriate and at odds with the values of peace that are so central to Mennonite culture. And then kind of found myself again having to revisit, what cultural context do I really belong in? Is there kind of a place for me in all that?
I'm hearing a journey across your life whereby you're trying to find a denominational and a Christian home in the broader circles that exist, you know, where you came from, MCUSA. I came from evangelicalism proper, conservative evangelicalism. And it's so interesting, kind of coming from different directions, the same pressure points of 2016, the Iraq War, as being these places realizing, to what degree should I, can I affiliate with these larger cultural structures that exist? And also, I feel like this is a generational question. I don't want to make any assumptions on age, but we're probably both geriatric millennials. We're like a little bit older. Hey,
you may be geriatric. You may be geriatric. Okay. I would say I'm like square in the like millennial without the good, like add-on to geriatric.
Good.
Yes. So I'm 33. I was born in 1990. So I assume you're an 80s child.
Yes.
Yes.
You are right there as a millennial. I'm the old one. Thank you for that correction.
Yeah. I'm glad we clarified this.
Yes. One thing that I've learned about my generation and upcoming generations is just, where do we fit in? Where are we going to be? And there isn't an assumption of loyalty to these broader denominational systems that have been created. It's like, actually, there's an inherent suspicion oftentimes until trust and safety is earned. Does that reflect any of your personal values or no?
So I think that I came to a lot of the sort of denominational or even non-denominational systems, because non-denominational churches have their own stuff, even when it's not defined, with a lot of innocence and naivete. Because I think, and probably another important part of my cultural story is that I was homeschooled my whole childhood until I went to college. And so the greatest influences on my life were my parents rather than my peers. So I think that I had a lot of more of my parents' sort of loyalty, maybe is the right word, to denominational systems and church as we knew it. Like the right way to go to church was like very Presbyterian and decent and in order, and like turn to page 352 in the hymnal where there's great is thy faithfulness. So I had a lot of loyalty sort of coming into these kinds of denominational structures. Over time, as I've encountered some of the challenges and shortcomings and even abuses of these different church settings. I think that some of that innocence and trust has sort of declined. So maybe I didn't start out as a young adult, you know, being this typical millennial, you know, question everything, be outside the establishment. I think that over time, I've probably assimilated more into that millennial kind of skepticism, not skepticism of faith per se, skepticism of the systems of power in church.
Yeah, it's good hearing that clarification. And it is so important to hear too, being homeschooled and what that is and does, kind of coming into the church systems as you've moved around. It's very interesting. It's cool. We kind of did this backwards. Usually we talk background, Jesus, and then church. We kind of went to church, which is so good to hear that. I want us to land on Jesus. One of the first questions I want to ask is, what was your mental image of Jesus growing up? You know, in the PCUSA churches that you attended or you're at, was there flannel white Jesus on a wall? Were you taught that he was a Middle Eastern man? Like, where were you at with all of that?
Yeah, honestly, I think that Jesus was sort of social justice hero. I'm not sure I would have necessarily even articulated this or visualized this as a kid, but I think that I would have seen Jesus as like the champion of all the social justice movements that I was exposed to. I wouldn't have necessarily put a ton of or been very concerned about sort of the Christ of faith, as we talk about in biblical studies, the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith. That I think that's an artificial distinction, really. But for me, Jesus was just the one standing up for the underdog and his divinity or humanity and whether he literally rose from the dead. All those things were probably kind of tangential to me at that point. The point was just that Jesus, you know, toppled the tables of power and confronted the powerful. And so kind of like either like hippie Jesus or like social justice Jesus, like not necessarily even with a lot of biblical stuff to back this up, because I wasn't concerned about that at that time. My church wasn't very biblically centered. But yeah, just Jesus is the one who's going to stick it to the system, more or less.
And how has that evolved as you've gotten to know Jesus and as a scholar, an Old Testament scholar, like understanding Judaism at a level at which most of us don't? Talk about that evolution of getting to know Jesus and following the Jewish Christ.
I'm super embarrassed to say this, but I honestly hadn't read a lot of the Bible before I went to seminary, because I was just like following this cool, radical Jesus and like, kind of who cared about the Old Testament. It was like all about God being angry and people killing each other. And like who really, that's kind of contraindicated by the person of Jesus, who is, you know, so all that. So I came to a seminary when I was 22, being very unfamiliar with the Bible and kind of just trying to get biblical studies courses out of the way, those prerequisites out of the way to do other more interesting things and be a radical social reformer. And then I was just really stopped in my tracks by the Bible. And I think I'm probably one of the few people I know who went to seminary and became like more biblically centered instead of like far left deconstruction. But for me, it was a conversion to scripture.
Wow.
My first semester, I took an introduction to Old Testament class. I realized that I had sort of just been looking at the tip of the iceberg as far as all these sort of social concerns that I thought I was so progressive and enlightened about were concerned. And I think that I really encountered God's heart in scripture, and that changed me and made me someone who loved the Bible. And the really hard places and things in society that I was interested in addressing, how much more deeply can we do that when we understand like who God is revealed in scripture? And the fact that the Bible doesn't shy away from that really hard stuff, whether it's sexual violence or warfare or all these other aspects of the broken human condition, like that makes it all the more powerful to me. So my evolution was really from a Christian cultural context that didn't take the Bible super seriously because we were so much smarter than the writers of scripture, and God is speaking to us more than like the people who wrote Second Samuel or whatever. Like, I realized, like, no, this is where I can learn who God is. This is where I can learn how I need to be transformed for the healing of the world. And then I just couldn't really stop with the Bible thing and ended up getting a PhD in Old Testament, which was a passion and commitment that really sustained me, as you know, as someone with a PhD as well, through those really grueling years. And I found myself growing closer and closer to God through my study of the scriptures.
Thanks so much for sharing that. Related to cultural identity and Jesus, what are some of the things that you've learned that God really affirms about your cultural identity, that Jesus affirms about your cultural identity? You even hit on it a little bit in terms of the hospitality piece of Southern culture. Or what are some things that you really see Jesus teaching you to resist in your own cultural framework and identity?
Well, I think I'm going to start with that one first. So I grew up in a culture where niceness was super prized.
Interesting.
Like, we may be telling you to like, go leave us alone, go leave me alone, but we got to do it with a smile and like being nice. Hurting people's feelings is super taboo. Culturally, in my family, and I would say sort of more generally in Southern culture. And as someone with some degree of anxiety about social interactions, like I could get on board with that. But at the same time, I think what I've encountered through God and Christ through my years of thinking and learning and growing has been to lean in more to places of conflict. Not saying you should be a jerk, because I don't think that's a good thing either, but to be more comfortable being prophetic where it's necessary to be, to confront injustice, whether that's in personal relationships or in society more generally. And sometimes that means not being liked by everybody, and that's super hard for me. So I would say that's one area of confrontation for me. I think one area where I feel that my spiritual journey as a Christian has dignified my culture has been in valuing the voices of those on the margins. And I think there were a lot of instincts of that in my upbringing. But at the same time, I thought that this was a value we had sort of in spite of all the patriarchy and xenophobia and all this stuff in scripture, not because this is part of God's story revealed in scripture all along. And I think for me, especially, this has involved becoming an advocate for people who have experienced power-based violence of various kinds. A lot of my scholarship and sort of hands-on ministry has involved trauma stories. And I've been really moved by how the Bible centers survivors of trauma and really models ways that we as 21st century Christians can encourage people to seek safety and justice and empowerment. And so now I would say my whole trajectory is bent towards seeking to accompany and advocate and care for people who have experienced domestic violence, sexual violence, various other kinds of trauma that are often tied up in gender as well. And I would say that I do that now from a much deeper place rather than just because I'm this flaming liberal or something, but believing that that's where God's heart is with the marginalized.
I love it, kind of the irony of God confronting your identity to be more confrontational or embrace a spirit in which we can be prophetic and speak out. And as I've followed you, that's something I've really admired over the past really 3 or 4 years of our friendship and just watching from afar. And it's something that you do see all throughout. Not only scripture, it's a conflict-rich environment, but even when we get to Jesus, it's a very conflict rich environment, Jesus, initiating conflict in an honor, shame, culture, collectivist society where for a different set of reasons that could be similar or different than Georgia Southern culture and your family, that conflict really is causing tension. And we see God's son come in and do that. And what does that look like? And as a fellow Southerner, the niceness is a interesting thing. But you know what, in Indiana, this is what I learned about like folks who settled on the wave of colonialism in the area in which you live. It's called Minnesota nice. It's actually something that people say.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Where there is this niceness and this passive aggressive Christian disposition. It's like this weird mixture.
Yeah.
Where people don't know how to have conflict. The challenge with that is like, you don't have the tools. So when it happens, it's really bad.
My gosh. What do we do now?
And so it's interesting trying to follow a template of Jesus, not swinging a pendulum to, I'm just going to like confront, yell at people and literally flip tables everywhere I go. But that we would have that witness knowing that Jesus says, if everybody likes you, you're not doing it right. That's the Sermon on the Mount. So I really admire what you're saying there. And as we kind of conclude, I do want to hear more about your writing and you talk about your advocacy work for people who don't know yet. I would love for you to share a little bit about your first book and the second book that you're writing, probably a third too, whatever you want to share. We'd love to hear about following Jesus into that space.
Yeah. So my first book is about sexual violence in the Bible. It's called Leaving Silence, Sexualized Violence, the Bible, and Standing with Survivors. I published it in 2021 with Herald Press. And in that book, I try to confront mostly my own notion that the Bible is something that survivors have to be scared of because of all the crazy, weird, disturbing graphic stories.
Yeah.
And actually really try to make the point through that book that it's showing God's witness to and solidarity with survivors. And all of this really culminates in the person of Jesus, who, if we look closely at the way the crucifixion narrative is written, the kinds of torture and his death actually have some very sexualized themes of abuse. And so what does the resurrection mean in light of all that for survivors? So that book was written much more from an academic perspective. And then mostly because I was a little bit scared to talk about my personal story at that point. And then I had an opportunity come up to write a book on that ultimately got the title Forgiveness After Trauma. And that book is exploring the ideas of forgiveness and reconciliation that are often really abused to keep people who have experienced domestic violence and other kinds of abuse in those abusive relationships. I think this is really a tragically common phenomenon, and because you would think that churches would be the ones on the front lines trying to get people out of abusive relationships.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, so commonly that's the opposite. And so in this book, I do talk quite a lot about my personal experiences of domestic violence in my first marriage and intertwine those with scriptural reflections. And this is really representative of my own journey of staying for a lot longer than I meant to in a relationship that was abusive, in part because of the messages that I was internalizing that forgiveness looked like staying in an abusive relationship. So in that book, I talk a lot more about my own trauma, and I'm a little terrified for, you've already read it, I think.
Yes.
But you know how bad it is. But it's really personal, and I'm really nervous for people to read it, and also excited and empowered in a way too. So I don't know. When I write a third book, it's going to be about happy things. I think I'm going to write about remarriage as a Christian. Because I think that remarriage or second marriage or whatever you want to call it is often kind of a taboo topic. Because you got divorced first, if you're getting married again, oftentimes, or if you didn't have a spouse pass away. So I'd like to talk about sort of the redemptive edge of remarriage and where in scripture we might put ourselves in dialogue with that. So it's going to be a happy book about my happy marriage, And we're going to kind of just like put all the trauma stuff in the past at that point.
You're only tackling difficult topics. It's awesome. I think it's beautiful. And yeah, having read your second book, it's going to be coming out soon. It's exciting. It's exciting for you to be speaking into those topics. And I also hear Christ through you and in you coming from the setting in which you came, where you've said Jesus the social justice warrior, which is a beautiful thing to believe. Now married to the text of scripture and falling in love with like, well, where did he came from? And like how that developed in the PCUSA culture. And then speaking into these very challenging, difficult topics, and your story matters, your witness matters, and your voice matters, no matter how much resistance we get, which we do get it for various reasons, from different people and theological justification, all that stuff. So I just want to say thanks so much for bringing that witness for us. What's the title of the second book?
It's Forgiveness After Trauma.
Well, thanks so much for being with me today and sharing your story.
Well, thank you. It's such a joy to talk with you about the cultural Christ.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram, handles jwbuck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.